Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 57, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Amy from Burbank, California.
Oh, we're doing the actual valley. Well, then actually I'm Peter from Glendale. LA, but Peter from Glendale, California.
Let's be specific. I love it.
Yes.
All right. In the news, the only news that I have is, well, kind of like last week, we were talking about shows that are on the bubble. A couple of things that have happened. Nothing has come off the bubble, but a couple more shows have been on the bubble, and like Body of Proof has done really, really well in the ratings, which means that V's chances of renewal have gone down. Boo on that. And then Peter brought to my attention that contract negotiations with House, the show's doing really well, but they're having difficulty negotiating their contract and the deadline's coming up, so we don't know what's going to happen with that. Though, to be honest, if House ended this season, I'd be okay. So, whatever. I'm not really, that's not one of the shows I'm worried about. Do you guys have any news?
Not really news, but I did get fooled on April Fool's Day.
Oh, yeah. I happened to be on the road trip, and they read the... you're talking about the Firefly?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the Firefly April Fool's was like... It was actually pretty good, and when I was reading it, I was kind of like, but Nathan Fillion's doing Castle. I was like, that's not possible. Like, that was my first thought. I was like, well, they can't do that because he's on a very successful show. And then he tweets later saying that Castle is ending and he's going to have to go and find movies or something. It's like on the same day. And I was like, did they coordinate that? But yes.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been valid if you'd read the Entertainment Weekly article from the week before.
Right, because Castle got renewed. Mm-hmm. I know that. That's why I was just kind of like, what's going on? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I would say I was surprised and mildly tricked. I was just kind of like, because I was like, there are problems with this. This can't happen because of this. And I was like, and Joss Whedon is doing that. Like, I was saying, like, all the problems with why that couldn't happen.
See, I didn't even think logically. I just thought, Firefly, coming back, yay! And I clicked on it, and then I was fooled.
It was pretty, well, pretty good article.
The website that I go to a lot of times, IGN, they always do their April Fools. But, of course, the trick is, like, do you remember? And the headliner for IGN was, we've got the trailer for the Harry Potter television show. And I was like, Harry Potter television show? Like, it was the Aurorers. And I was like, well, what the hell is this? Like, and of course, as soon as I hit play, I was like, this looks kind of crappy. I don't know if this is, you know, it was fake. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Let's get you.
Yeah, I totally forgot it was April 1st. And they were like getting people all day. And also, because I was at WonderCon, they were the producers and stuff were doing stuff on stage. They were throwing stuff out during their interviews, and then somebody's like, "Well, it's 3 o'clock. Is it too late for April Fools now?" So we
That's
were like,
just
"Yes,
not fair."
So yeah, that was pretty good. All right, let's go on talking about the show, the shows. The first show we want to talk about is the premiere of a show called The Killing on AMC, and it was a 2-hour premiere. They played 2 episodes back to back. Peter, since you saw it first, why don't you give us what you thought?
I also like to say that long-time listeners will know that I actually do not have cable, so anytime there's a big show on AMC or FX that I want to watch, I usually have to see if they stream it on the internet or if they, you know, have it on iTunes.
What is this, your legal disclaimer?
Well, no. I'm actually letting people know that, I mean, if you're like me and you're curious about this show, The Killing, it's available at iTunes and the PlayStation Network. So, and the pilot, which is what we're going to discuss, was actually available for free. So I downloaded it the first... They packaged it as 2 separate episodes, but, you know, it's basically the 2-hour premiere. I liked it a lot. I think that I have not finished Twin Peaks, but I think one of the things about the episode was that the basic setup is, you know, you're in small town, or not really small town, but you're in Seattle... And our main character is a homicide detective who is about to transfer to Los Angeles. She's getting married, and she's got, like, you know, 24 hours or whatever before her job is done. And there's a new partner or a new person who's going to be taking her place. And, of course, you know, it looks like there may or may not be a girl. No, there's a girl that's missing who may not be dead. And while watching the episode, I thought, well, part of this kind of reminds me of Twin Peaks, and part of this reminds me of Mystic River, which was the Sean Penn movie about his missing daughter. And another part of it reminds me of what we've been seeing, which is that this is based on a Danish, the killing is actually based on a Danish television show. And as we know, the Danes and the Swedes lately have been very popular with bullies and serial killers, with the obviously the very popular Dragon Tattoo Millennium Trilogy and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things when I was watching it that I was like, well, this kind of reminds me of this, and this kind of reminds me of that. But honestly, I mean, the show was pretty well acted and good that by the second hour, I wasn't thinking of it. But in the first hour, I was very aware of, oh, this is kind of like Seven, and this is kind of like that. But no, I thought it was good.
What did you think of the
characters?
I was going to say, what did you think of the characters?
Well, I was going to say, the only thing that I'm a little hesitant on is that the main character of the show, I don't remember what her name is, but she's very much like a weary kind of homicide detective who it seems like she's obviously seen a lot and, you know, she's probably seen a lot of terrible cases and stuff. And she is not really much of a talker. And I'm not saying that all characters have to be real chatty, but while I do think the actress is good, like I think she, you know, it's not like I was like, oh, she's terrible or anything. I'm not quite sure how I feel about her because she keeps so much of what she's feeling like close to the vest type of thing, which I think is deliberate. But there's a scene in the show where obviously there's a girl is missing and, you know, they go to a school to talk to the teenagers about this girl. Now, by this point, the girl, we know the girl's dead. And actually, it's a pretty cool reveal. She's in the trunk of a car. And the car was in water, so they submerge it, and the trunk opens. And so it's almost like you're looking at this woman, you know, this dead girl submerged in this weird little tiny pool of water. It's very creepy. But so they get to the high school, and they don't tell the teenagers that this girl's dead. They're basically just saying, has anybody seen Rosie Larson? Anybody any clues on what's going on? And this reminded me of The Closer's Brenda Lee Johnston. She does that a lot. She'll always, like, meet people, and she won't tell them that their husband's dead because you're wondering if these people are a suspect. But when Brenda Lee does it, because it's Kira Sedgwick, it's kind of funny, you know, and she has that, like, southern charm and everything. This woman's very, like, all business. And so, like, I guess part of me is like, well, you're so quiet and stoic, I don't think the teenagers are going to trust you, so I'm not really sure what the point of, like, not telling them, like, truth is. So I'm a little curious about that, like, how that's going to go, but I do think she's a good actor. The rest of the acting, good. The family, the father, and Michelle, I think the father played the killer in Zodiac, and the woman is Michelle Forbes, who was on Battlestar Galactica, and they're very sympathetic, and she's got two brothers, right?
Two little brothers.
Two little brothers, very, very interesting. I mean, I would say the whole cast, like, fine. It's just, I'm just not sure about her. Not, again, not bad actress. Not, I'm just more like, you have a character that keeps so much to herself. How is that going to run for 13 episodes? Well, that's all I was.
I would actually argue that I think that she's fascinating. Because I always like the quiet.
But you think that's fascinating.
Yeah, I think she's the quiet, stoic type. And that means me as the viewer, I have to work to figure out what she's thinking. And actually, I think part of her whole quiet stoicism is to hold in, because, like, when she looked at the body and when they found the murder scene and stuff like that, the look on her face was sort of closed off, but you could see the anguish too. And so
well, that's why I said I think she's a good actress.
Right, that's what I love. I love the stoic actor where I have to work and read their face to figure out what they're thinking. I don't need you to say, and I think that's part of why I don't like the new partner guy, because he is the chatty guy who has to say something all the time. And he's always saying stuff and he's always putting his foot in his mouth. And he's always trying to be cool, and he's lazy too. It's like every time something happens, he's kind of like, oh, the case is over, let's go home. It's probably this, she was probably a hooker. Or, you know, like, she's probably, well, obviously, she's out here in the field giving some guy a blowjob or something. Like everything that he said was offensive. I also like
that he always basically just wants to go home.
Right,
he's always like, wait, what are you going to do, man? You're my ride. I never think of cops talking as each other as, like, you're my ride.
Well, and that's part of why I don't like him, because I was like, she has to stay because the murder will not be solved with him.
Like, oh, right. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because right, no. He's just, no, like,
I see what you're saying. I find him kind of the comedy relief of the show, so I think he's a little funny. But you're right. I see what you're saying. I guess I find it entertaining.
Found him very offensive. Like, everything he said, I was just like, shut up.
And then there's a scene where he actually, but near the end of the episode, which is the end of the 2-hour episode, the second hour was called The Cage, he actually kind of makes a discovery because of his kind of weird personality.
Well, at that point, it's pretty clear, because at this point we know that there's a murder, like the most of his ignorance and being an idiot came from him not wanting there to be a murder. He kept, it was like, oh, it wasn't a murder. Oh, there's no body. Oh, like he kept trying to go home. But once they actually find the body, now he's kind of like, well, I want to prove that I can solve this case on my own and I don't need her. So that was part of his motivation. And then he does the whole creepy older guy hitting on little teenage girls thing.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, there's like two teenage girls and he's smoking pot. So of course they come over and they know he's a cop and he's totally like being, and I was like, where's this guy? I'm like, well, clearly he's not, I'm like, okay, clearly it's not going to be that he's going to kill them or something. But I'm like, but where's this going, man? I'm like, why? He's so creepy.
Yeah, and then he figured out, because he came off as cool, he let the girls tell him where they go to make out, because he made it pretend, he
right.
made it seem like
that,
he was going to have sex with them, which was like, what? But then,
right, but of course, just to let audience, you know, people listening know, he doesn't. Then he blows them off, and then he goes and checks out the crime scene.
Right, and I understood he was doing his whole undercover thing, because he
right.
thinks that that's his superpower, that he can, and he talks
well, yeah,
about it all the time.
That he's cool, but he's
right.
actually a guy that's too old to be that, to act that way.
Right, he's too old to act that way, and he comes off as an idiot. So he did use his superpower this one time, and he got the information. And he found the murder scene. But my thing is, once he finds the scene, he still doesn't really know what he's doing. So, like...
But then he calls for backup, and then you've got everybody's
no,
there.
No, I know, right? But I believe he could do what he did to find the scene by getting information from the teens. But if you give him a murder scene, can he evaluate the blood splatter and figure out what happened? No. He's not that bright. He really isn't. I don't understand how he's a detective. Like... Everything that he said for the first 2 hours, I was just like, shut up. So, anyway, I'm done with my rant.
I
want to
say one more thing, though, is that, I mean, I see what you're saying, but actually, if I have a criticism of the show, and I think it's a good, you know.
Oh, yeah, just because I don't like him doesn't mean I don't like the series. Like, I think the woman is great. I think the family is great. I think everybody else is really good. And I would like to make my prediction now on who the murderer is, since it's going to be 13 episodes till we find out. My second episode in prediction is that it is the candidates that can, what's that candidate? The Richmond found,
There's a candidate, and we should tell people that the murdered girl was found in a car
that was owned by the campaign.
Campaign.
I think it's the woman that works for the campaign. That's my
right.
prediction.
And so there's the guy who's running for senator, and he has a woman and a guy. The guy is really like, super hardcore, annoying, and like very much like he's always wanting him to do bad things just to get pop to win a popularity contest. And the woman seems a little more level headed, which is why you're picking her. You're saying, because I mean, because clearly we're supposed to think it's the senator
right.
or the annoying guy.
Right.
You know?
So I'm picking. Right. So, I'm picking the. The butler. So yes, I'm picking the butler.
Yeah. Oh, actually, he does. Yeah, he's sleeping with her too.
Right?
Right,
and I think that's the motivation. I think it's because he's sleeping with her.
Although didn't you also say I thought you were thinking it was two killers.
Well, I said that because there's a scene where there was obviously somebody beat her up at the party, and that was
right,
down in the basement,
which
of
is
school,
the cage, that's
which
the
is the cage, right? And that's all bloody and everything, but she obviously walked away from that because we saw her running through the woods, which is
right.
was pretty far away. And so I think it's going to be two. It's going to be like somebody at the school got into a fight with her, blah, 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 and that happened. And then she ran away from that, and she's trying to like get home, and then she runs into the person that kills her. That's what it
was. Right, I got to say, that's a great opening. I know that the famous opening of Twin Peaks is somebody comes across a woman wrapped in plastic, and that's, you know, on the coast, and that's Laura Palmer. And the opening of this is... The main character that you like is doing her daily jog, and then you cut to the girl before she's dead, running in the woods in the dark, scared for her life. So of course we assume, oh, she's going to come across the dead body, like that's what it's going to be. But she doesn't. She comes across, it looks like Do you think it's a seal or something?
It was some sort of mammalish thing that washed up.
It's just kind of, it's very odd and weird. And it's like, ew, what the hell is that? I mean, so I think what we're supposed to see it as is that, you know, she's clearly kind of like looking at it. And it's almost kind of like a unfinished business like type of thing, which of course leads to eventually finding. It's a pretty cool, it's a good opening. Well, wait, I want to say my only criticism of the show, and I do like it though. I'm totally on board. Julia and I are both like, yes, I can't wait. Is why not sure why we even need that she's supposed to be leaving town? Like, I mean, really? Because clearly this is going to be the folk conflict of she has a son who doesn't want to move to Los Angeles. She has a fiance who can't wait to see her. And she's supposed to be leaving in 24 hours. But clearly that's not going to happen because it's a 13-episode thing. But a part of me is like, why do you even need this? Why isn't she just a detective with a nude partner? Like, I don't know why. Who cares? Why does she have to be moving to Los Angeles? Why? It just feels like a fake tension to me.
And with that, we need to wrap this up because we've been talking about it for 10 minutes.
Yes. But anyways, that's all. But very good. Yeah. Thumbs up.
All right. The next show we want to talk about is Stargate Universe.
Mm-hmm. I saw it too.
And what you think?
I really like the device of being... I don't know what you would call it. It's like when you go in
when they step, you sits in the chair and then your body, your consciousness is out of your body.
Yeah, thank you for putting that into words for me. Because it's really neat. It's like he's really experienced. I've seen it in other shows, right. But the way they do it differently, I like that.
Well, it was the whole concept of last week. We found out that the two loves of two of the main characters' lives, who we all thought were dead, were actually... they uploaded them to the computer, mainframe, so they could show up as kind of a hologram, you could talk to them, but you couldn't physically interact with them. So they're trying to figure out, okay, well, how can we physically interact? And the solution seems so simple that, of course, it's going to have problems. And I like the fact that her wanting him to stay manifested in him not being able to get out of the program, though her whole thing was... the way to get out was that he had to love her or something, which seems like a weird trap. Like,
I got a little confused at times because it's like, okay, hey, I sat in the chair, I'm back now. And then for a whole good period of time...
oh, yeah, she was faking it. She wanted him to think he was out so that it would give her more time to figure out what was wrong with the program or whatever. But it still felt like she was tricking him versus anything else. And then she's going to get deleted, but she tells him that... all he had to do was love her to get out, but obviously he didn't love her, which is why he didn't get out. But then he's like, no, that's not true. So I'm kind of like, well, what are they trying to say? Are they saying that the program was flawed? Or are they trying to say that he never loved her? Like, I don't believe that he didn't love her. I really believe he did.
Yeah, so sure did seem like it.
It really seemed like it. So I'm just kind of like, I'm not quite sure what they're trying to say there. And I'm trying to remember if there's any other plot. Like, I don't think so. It was mainly Rush and her.
Yeah, but there was also the whole political side of things. Oh, yeah. you're talking about still the on the ship.
What political side of things? What are we talking about? Oh, when they were to the Stargate, they needed
Picardo and
McKay was there. McKay. I totally forgot about McKay. they needed the Stargate to resupply Destiny, but they needed one specific Stargate that was under threat from the Lucian Alliance. So instead of negotiating, which didn't seem to be working, they decided to do it by force, which ended up backfiring, like, unbelievably.
The undercover operation.
Right. Oh, my God. That went so badly.
Because of that one soldier.
Well, because he figured it out. But even if he hadn't figured it out, they would have eventually realized, because when they returned the guys to their bodies, they'd have been like, oh, that wasn't me. And, you know, they would have eventually figured that out. And their whole justification for doing it was, oh, well, they have an alliance with the Lucians, so it's okay if we take their Stargate by force. But then they find out, oh, they totally don't have an alliance with them, and they were working on their alliance with us, and we've just now screwed them. So
it was an incredibly stupid plan.
Oh, yeah, it really was. And I was like... I can't believe you guys did that.
That whole device, though, of I know I said that whole device before, but when he looks in the mirror and he sees not his own reflection.
Oh, with the stones? Yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of Quantum Leap.
Yes.
And Dead Like Me.
I've only watched a little Dead Like Me. But yes, I can see that. But it was a good episode. Like, I forgot about the McKay stuff, which means that I it wasn't as important to me. Emotionally, the whole thing with Rush was way more, had more weight. And deleting those characters, well, they didn't delete them. They backed them up to some backup isolated memory thing, so they're not, they can't interact with them anymore. But anyway. All right, so Stargate Universe, really good episode, even though we are drawing into the last few of ever, which makes me sad.
Aww.
But it was really good. Okay, this week's episode of Castle.
Castle.
Was...
The body in the oven.
Ha! Oh, the pizza thing. I have to say, this was one of the more silly episodes. Like, sometimes Castle can be fun and silly, and sometimes it can be sort of serious, but this one was, like, double silly. Like, the Tony's fantastic,
terrific authentic Nicks, authentic Nicks, and terrific Nicks.
I thought there was four.
Oh, I think there...
Whatever. Yeah. I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, all that was just totally silly. And even with the mob connection that happened at the end, I was still like, I don't know if I care. And there wasn't enough Castle and Beckett interaction to make it worth it for me. I don't know. I didn't really... I wasn't excited.
It felt like a standard episode.
It felt like a substandard episode, actually. Like, the standard episodes of Castle just make me smile. Like, I really enjoy it. I usually don't care about the case that much, but the interaction between the two characters just makes me just happy. And this week's episode was like, it's alright. Like, not that interesting interaction. And the whole thing with the daughter. What was it?
Her friend
wanted her
boyfriend. No, her friend didn't want her.
Her friend, at the end of the entanglement, you find out the friend was just jealous that she was spending time with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And so then she was a complete jerk to her and embarrassed her and did a Facebook thing and spiraled very quickly out of control, which I was just kind of like, you know what? I don't really care. I didn't care about that.
But so. Castle almost never fails to make me go, oh my God, at the beginning of the show. Oh. When they show the body.
Oh, in the oven?
Yeah.
That was kind of grisly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say this was an okay episode, a little less than okay. I wasn't excited about it. But, you know, it's still Castle. It's not like I'm not going to watch it. This week's episode of NCIS?
Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of boring.
Well, the one thing, I'd say the case, I agree with you, but the stuff that actually happened outside the case, which was the new woman, I forgot her name. The blonde chick.
I can't remember her name,
but her being added as like, she was like, oh, I'm in charge of this case, so I'm Gibbs' boss. And I was like, yeah, right. And watching her try to take on Gibbs head to head as his boss, part of it is she's like 15, 20 years younger than him, which wasn't going to work in the first place. And then she tried to use her feminine wiles to get information from an interrogation subject. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, Gibbs is going to hate this.
Trying way too hard.
She was trying way too hard. But on the other hand, I did feel a little sorry for her because Gibbs just walked right over her. Like, he just was like, he gave her absolutely no respect. And he just was walking all over her left and right. And she didn't necessarily, she's still a good guy. She's not a bad person. So I kind of felt a little bad how badly he was treating her, but I like the fact that Tony basically told her, like, don't go up against the white whale. You're not going to win. And she's like, oh, the director likes me better. And he was like, yes, and how many directors have we had here? Mm-hmm. And Gibbs has always remained. And so he tried to explain it to her, and she just didn't get it.
I was most interested in the subplot with CIA Ray.
Oh, yeah. Ziva and her boyfriend. It was the whole Ziva and her boyfriend and Tony and his girlfriend and Gibbs just being annoyed by all the relationships that were going on. He was just kind of like, keep it out of the frickin' office. You know, because as soon as he was cool with Ziva's boyfriend until he found out he was CIA. As soon as he found out he was CIA, he was like, yeah, you gotta leave.
And she was upset, too.
Well, no, she knew he was CIA.
Oh, she did, but she didn't know he was involved in
the case. Right, she didn't know he was involved in the case. And once she found out he was involved with the case, she was like, was I part of your cover? You know, so then she broke up with him. But ironically, I think he really cares about her. But, you know, it's like all the relationship stuff was good. And I liked Gibbs' ultimatum at the end. He was like, it's against the rules to sleep with a coworker. He's like, mm-hmm. if you're going to be, we're going to be working as a team, you can't sleep with DeNozzo. And she just kind of looked at him, and I was like, is she going to not do what he told her to do? Because I see, basically, if she doesn't do it, then Gibbs is going to have to go to Tony and tell him to stop. And I have to say, if Tony has to choose between her, and Tony does like sleeping with his women, mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue that, but he never disobeys Gibbs. Doesn't happen. Mm. So if it's a choice between her and Gibbs, Tony's going to pick Gibbs.
What did you, I was wondering, what did you think of the case itself?
I don't remember it. the case was, because the whole thing about there's a killer going around saran wrapping people.
And
like,
freezing them, right?
I don't think they were frozen. No, he's not freezing them. He's slitting their throats and he's cleaning them. He's cleaning the body so there's no forensic evidence, and then he's saran wrapping them.
And dressing them up like
dressing them
higher
up,
rank than they are.
Right, because the uniforms have a meaning, and we don't know what the meaning is. I guess it's a different play on the serial killer, but... And I'd say NCIS has dealt with a couple of serial killers, and usually they wrap it up in that episode.
No pun intended.
Ha, nice. All right. But NCIS was good this week. I'm not quite sure where they're going, but it looks like it's all leading up to a really big finale, so I'm excited about that. Alright, one thing I wanted to do, I don't know, Peter, have you seen any of the other new pilots that they had out that were free on iTunes?
I had downloaded the Kennedys, but I only got about 15 minutes in. I was like, meh, it just wasn't really doing it for me, so I don't know if I could really say too much about it.
Yeah, first 15 minutes is not a very long evaluation. Other than I already decided that I wasn't going to watch it at all. Because it looked pretty bad. So I was like, nah. But I wanted to take this moment to talk about all the other new pilots that started. And I'm going to talk about them really quickly. I watched Body of Proof. I watched 3 episodes of Body of Proof. Just to be sure of my analysis. Which was, Dana Delaney is really charming and fun. However, that's not her character that she's supposed to be playing. The character she's supposed to be playing is socially awkward and brilliant. She's basically supposed to be playing the Emmy version of House, where she's way smarter than everybody else in her department, and because she's way smarter, then they deal with her rudeness, and they deal with her rubbing everybody the wrong way and making enemies and doing whatever she wants, blah, 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 because she's so brilliant. And I'm like, okay, she's exactly like House, but... like I said, she's an ME. However, Dana Delaney apparently didn't get the note because she kind of comes off as, like, I see her doing the lines that say, I am awkward, socially awkward, but she has charm. She's very charming, so I don't believe it. So it's like a weird dichotomy of the character that doesn't work for me. And other than the woman from The Wire... She plays a cop who I really like her. I don't really like any of the other characters. Well, Seven of Nine is decent, even though she doesn't have much to do. What is that woman's name? Plays Seven of Nine.
I don't know. Sorry.
I get minus points for that. I should know that. But I don't think I need to see any more Body of Proof. Like, it's one of those shows that if you stack the whole thing, then it might be fun to watch in a row, but there's no need to tune in week to week. There's just nothing about it that... everything seems to be played to the lowest common denominator, which also irritates me because the ratings are really high for that show. The next one I want to talk about is Breaking In. I watched the pilot for that last night, and it's kind of funny, it's kind of charming, it's also kind of blah, but... I did like the geek nerd guy. Like, there's a guy who dresses up. Like, he thinks that it's Comic-Con every day at work. So he'll, like, dress up in a different sci-fi outfit. And he showed up as Han Solo. He showed up as Han Solo and wanted to know if the new guy wanted to be Chewbacca. And he was like, is this some sort of prank? And he's been basically pranking him for the entire episode. It's like, you'll have the action of the episode and that guy will be pranking him throughout. And the pranks are pretty, like, they're not small pranks. Like, the dude comes out from work and his car is flipped upside down. And he's like, what the heck? And he goes, oh, I gotcha. And he's like, yes, this is a felony. And he's like, you need a ride home? He's like, well, yes. So The pranks were pretty funny. Christian Slater is a complete jerk, but that's kind of the point of his character. He basically recruits the guy from Reaper. Who's the lead guy from Reaper, Peter? Do you know?
Oh,
I don't know the actor's name. He's kind of, I know who you're talking about that, but unfortunately I don't
I
know
like
his name.
I like that guy.
Yeah, he's the main guy on this show, and basically he was a 27-year-old college student. Just he basically had hacked into the computer system at college and basically gave himself an unlimited scholarship. So he's basically at school.
His name is Brett Harrison.
I thought so. I was going to say Brett.
Yeah, he got an unlimited scholarship at school, and he basically was going to be a career student until... And he's like hacked. He's just living the easy life, and then Christian Slater finds out what he's doing and basically recruits him by saying, either you join my team or I turn you in. So those are your choices. So he's pretty much a strong-arming people onto the team, and then he puts a tracer on them by giving them a candy bar or stuff like that. Like, he comes off as a complete jerk, and it's sort of funny, but, eh. I mean, I might watch next week, maybe.
Wasn't Brett Harrison just on V?
Yes, he's the scientist guy on V, yes. And then I watched the pilot for Chaos, which was apparently dead on arrival. The ratings were, like, abysmal. And Chaos was cute. It felt like it could have been a movie versus a TV show. Like, CIA guys who, because of budget cuts, everybody is being cut from the CIA, and they send in the young new guy to spy on them so that they can figure out a way to fire the other people on the team. And of course, because they're all freaking CIA agents, they realize why he's there, and so they basically prank this guy for the whole episode. So, it was alright. I'd say of all the new shows that I sampled, The Killing is probably the only thing that I would recommend people watch. The rest of them, if you have nothing else to watch because everything's in repeats, then I'd say Breaking In is halfway entertaining and Chaos is a little bit funny. But, I wasn't moved very much by any of them. All right, the next show we want to talk about really quickly. You have 2 minutes. Talk about Mr. Sunshine. What do you think?
Oh, I thought it was fun. You know, Entertainment Weekly has been given Mr. Sunshine like D- and stuff. And I'm just like, I don't understand. I think their point is that you've got people from the West Wing. You've got John Wells, who was an executive producer of the West Wing. You know, you've got all these like heavy hitters, good writers, good directors, you know, actors, and they feel like it's just terrible. But I don't know. I like this show. I don't think it's like genius or anything. But this week's episode was the main character Matthew Perry meets Lizzie Kaplan, who I adore. She was also on Party Down, and she's kind of like a just wants to have sex, not no commitment type of person, which is what he is. But of course, he starts to fall for her. But I thought it was entertaining. And then the other part of the episode is that Allison Janney's son, who's my favorite character on the show, he starts to treat Lizzie Kaplan almost like a mother substitute, because like they have weird issues. So no matter what he asks her to do, she can't say no, right?
Right.
Which, so she's like, oh, let's go to the park or whatever. She's like, oh, of course, that sounds great, honey. Like, but I thought it was, you know, cute episode of it. I mean, I don't think Mr. Sunshine's like, again, it's not best ever, but I'm surprised that the ire that it gets from other critics.
I think if it weren't for Lizzie Kaplan, I might not have enjoyed the episode as much. I like her from True Blood. And I just like, I like her expressions. I just like her. What can I say?
I thought it was a pretty interesting episode. In that Matthew Perry was like, she's a female version of me, but now I want to evolve. Like, that was okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was
adult. I wonder if do you think he's going to hook up with the blonde girl from Better Off Ted?
Well, he already did. You mean again?
He did, but I always feel like that's the tension, is that, like, maybe they're supposed to be together or something.
I don't know. I think that her and the guy she's with now just kind of don't work. I'm not impressed.
Well, they work in the sense that they're really well-meaning and they're good people, but I don't know if they have the spark, you know?
Right. That's exactly what I mean.
I find myself wondering if a whole show about Roman and his mother would hold up better than...
Roman. Yeah, Roman's awesome. I love that guy.
I would agree. The next show we want to talk about is Justified.
And I will hit mute.
Oh, that's right, because you were only on season 1. Nice. All right. See, this was not the finale, but it was kind of the build-up for the... It was the release of a lot of build-up. Like, a lot of stuff happened. But also, by the end of the episode, you're like, holy crap, we're about to go into a war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
suspenseful and scary.
Mags, right? Mags.
Yeah.
Mags is fantastic. She does a great job of playing this kind of maternal figure that you think of, oh, she's just like my great aunt, or she's just like my mom, or she's just like... And she's freaking evil. Like, she's just...
She will crush her own son's hand.
She treats him like dirt. Yeah, you know, she's sad when he gets killed.
My baby.
Yeah. Oh, man, she did a great job. And I like the whole negotiation thing. Like, when she was like, yeah, that's a nice price. Let's triple that. And I won 4% in the entire company. I was like, holy crap. Like, she really knew how to negotiate a deal. She did a great job. But the thing is, her sons are idiots. And I don't understand how she's so smart. And the oldest son... is not that the cop one. He's not that bad. But the other two are just like brain dead, just sad. So once he finds out that his mom doesn't love him, because I think everything he had been doing was to get her approval.
Mm-hmm.
And once he has it confirmed that she doesn't love him, he's just like, screw it. He was basically setting himself up to be killed for the entire episode. Yeah, everything he was doing was to get himself killed. Because even if he managed to kill that girl, which is what he was trying to do, I don't know what Mags would have done. Because she really liked the girl.
Yeah.
She really did. So
obviously he doesn't really have a brain in his head that he uses. And so he wasn't...
Well, I think his thing was he wanted to see, if I kill her, will my mom kill me?
Mm. What do you think? Do you think she would have?
I don't know. I don't know what she would have done. It would have been very, very ugly. Whatever she did to him, if she didn't kill him, she'd have done something very, very bad to him. And I think that's crazy. I was like, she crushed your hand because you did a bad drug deal. Okay? That didn't do anything emotionally to her. If you kill that girl who she's emotionally attached to, are you insane?
Yeah, and he was even saying out loud, I saw the way that she gave you that hair clip like you were her prize...
Pig or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was off the chain, and I like his brother. His brother was like, look, he's like, you need to think about this. He was like, killing her, no matter what she did, you need to think about this. Think about what mom's going to do. And he did all that.
I love Jeremy Davies.
Yeah,
he's
doing a great job.
I was really afraid that he was actually going to kill him.
Oh, in this week's... It looked like he did in this week's episode. Yeah, but all of that was just really, really good. And just like... And Raylan... He knows what he started by shooting him. But, I mean, he didn't have a choice. He really didn't.
Yeah.
And I would think that Mags would be like, look, he was about to kill the girl. Raylan didn't have a choice. But because their families have been feuding for, what, a couple hundred years or something? Now they got to do something. And that the only good thing is Raylan doesn't have any kids and he's not married.
And her other son is, what's his name? Crowden?
The Coover was the one that got killed.
Yeah.
Who are you thinking of?
And then she has... maybe I'm thinking of the wrong person. The guy, his wife was wearing a red dress. Is that one of her sons?
No, she has three sons. One is the cop, the sheriff.
Yeah, I kind of came into it late.
So. Yeah, she's got three sons. Oh, you're thinking about Boyd Crowler.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is not... He and Raylan... Like, that's the whole thing is there's... There's two counties. There's the county that Mags lives in, and there's the county that the Crowders and Raylan's family live in. They live in next-door counties. So that Boyd Crowler and Raylan went to school together. They're more like brothers. So, yeah, Crowder is not one of her sons, because he's way too smart. Her sons are idiots.
I like how, even though it takes place in modern day, it has the feeling of Wild Wild West.
Yes. And so now we're all building up to... It's going to be family feud time, and he's going to have to protect his dad, and even though he hates his dad, but he's going to have to protect his dad and anybody that they consider are givens. But, I mean, so that means he technically needs to protect his ex-wife, in theory, if they decide that she's part of the feud.
I think it'll end on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, please no. All right, so thumbs up. It's all building up really good tension.
Woo!
moving on to Big Bang Theory. This week's episode was basically rumors, and they were playing an elaborate game. What's that game where you telephone? Yeah,
yes,
they were
right.
playing an elaborate game of telephone and finding out how quickly information spreads. And I have to say, the whole rumor about, not Kuther probably, Wolowitz and his girl and Bernadette breaking up, I knew that there was something wrong about that rumor. I wasn't sure what it was, but we hadn't seen any signs that Bernadette wanted to break up with Wolowitz, other than, of course, when she moved in with him, and then that didn't work out very well. Oh, I have a question. Now that they're supposed to be getting married, does that mean they're moving out from their mothers? Like, that, if I was Bernadette, that would have been my first thing. I was like, okay, we're moving away from your mom's, right? And I'm not doing all your laundry, right? That would have been my first concern. But there was a whole rumor thing, and I like that they were both fast. Who is it? Sheldon and
Amy, the Miami
Amy
character.
Farrah Fowler.
Farrah Fowler.
Yeah, they were. I like that they were very fascinated by the how rumors moved, and they would give you two rumors. Like, I am building a herb garden, and I've also had sex with Sheldon, and let's see which one passes along the tree. That was all.
Social experiment time.
Yeah, that was great. So I thought that was a pretty amusing episode. I really liked it.
Well, I like the idea when she says that, like, rumors are almost, they're almost like living beings, the way they spread. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like, I like that.
Yeah, that was all pretty good.
And
then I liked Priya talking to her brother, Kuthrapali. And he had written a poem about Bernadette being a, what? He compared her to something. And a clarinet. Bernadette, clarinet, talking about, I want Bernadette to ride my clarinet. And she said, our whole family thought that he was going to be the one riding clarinets. And I was like, oh no, they didn't go there. So that was all pretty funny. But I think, overall, good episode.
Mm-hmm. I like the video game with the bow and arrow.
Oh, right. He was like, you can't shoot the
Wii, yeah.
Yeah, he was like, you can't shoot the bow and arrow because you haven't drawn your arrow from your quiver.
Like, you're really getting your money's worth out of this game, aren't you?
And then he took the fake arrow and stabbed Sheldon through the heart with it. It was great.
I guess I'll have to play along.
Ow. All that was pretty good. I thought it was one of their better episodes. I really enjoyed it. And just so that we have time to talk about Vampire Diaries, which I know we're going to talk about for a while, let's move on to that.
Go ahead. I didn't see it. So I did watch a lot of shows this week.
Yes, true. You need to watch Vampire Diaries.
I know.
All right, Peter, I know you're long-winded. Get going.
Wait, what did you just say? Obviously, it's a big episode, and it's funny because the last time we saw them, Isabel had returned, and it was like, oh, Isabel, you know, Elena's, you know, mother slash now vampire and, you know, friend to Catherine and everything. And that actress, she was in a lot of movies in the 90s when she was younger, and I liked her. But watching this episode, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I don't really know if I like this character that much. Well, that worked out for me since she pretty much killed herself at the end.
But hold up, I think part of her acting, where she was acting all like robotic, was because she was being compelled.
Yes, yeah, no, you're right. I think you're right. Good. I mean, I always like Vampire Diaries. Always a lot of stuff happens. The only thing I was a little disappointed in was that, basically the whole thing is it's all about like Klaus and like how Klaus is controlling everything and is everyone afraid of Klaus and what's going to happen with Klaus and who have they cast as Klaus. And then they kind of do this thing at the end where, you know, this other guy comes in and captures Catherine, and he's clearly really powerful. So then I'm like, is that Klaus? Well, what's going on with this guy?
No, he's a
and
witch.
And then of course, later, it's like, wait, what?
He's a witch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Well, although, wait, I just thought of something. Yeah, you're right. I guess he is a witch. I didn't think of that because he was doing the witch thing. You mean with the brain thing?
Yeah, he was doing a spell. He was a witch. Remember they said Klaus has a whole cadre of witches?
Yeah, no, totally right. Yeah, yes. So that happens, and then at the end of the episode, we see that looks like there's some weird blood ceremony going on that the witch is doing, and then we turn and we see that it's the teacher, but I forgot what his character's name
Alaric.
And then he comes up to Catherine and he starts speaking in ye olde, like, you know, Eastern European speak. So clearly, and then she goes, Klaus? And I was like, oh, that's the move? I was like, it's just an actor we already knew, so...
I don't think that's the move. He's possessed him, but we are still going to meet the real Klaus.
Right, okay, that's what I was... Because I was like, well then, so where is it? Why did they even do it that way? Like, what's the point?
Well, because now Klaus can actually do stuff in the town without in danger. Because remember they said that Klaus's big deal is he doesn't want anyone to know where he is. His location is super top secret because he doesn't want to expose himself. That's how he lived to be a gazillion years old, however old he is. So now he can do stuff that he needs to do to make sure he gets the Moonstone and make sure he gets the doppelganger without endangering his own life. He now has this guy he can just walk around in, and what does he care if Alaric gets killed?
Oh, okay, that's true. Although, wait, question. Why does he let Elena go?
Because he knows where she is. If he tries, his whole thing is I think that you have to do the ceremony at a certain time or whatever. You know? Like last time it was like there had to be an eclipse or there has to be whatever. I think that they're waiting for a specific time because remember the other guy, not Klaus, but the other dude.
Sark?
No, the other vampire that's an old one, original. The one that they put the knife in.
Yeah.
Elijah was also waiting for a specific time. He was like, stay here, don't move. He was waiting for something specific. And I think Klaus is too. I think the ceremony, there's something got to do with it. But remember I was saying... My main thing was that they left Catherine alone in the house with the freaking Moonstone because Damon was like, oh, it's really well hidden. It's like, really well hidden, Damon?
Posing as soap, the soap bar?
Well, the only thing I have to say is I read online, some guy tweeted, and I can't remember his name, somebody likes television, I forgot his name, Mikey or something. He tweeted the best line ever. He was like, what are two cohabitating heterosexual brothers doing with a soap bowl? And I was like, that's a very good point. Like, I don't know any straight guy that has a soap bowl.
Which I don't think soap is gay or straight.
No, I'm not saying soap itself is, but the elaborate soap bowl? Seriously?
Really not. But I don't know if I really thought it was that elaborate. If anything, I thought it was... I don't know, I thought it was just kind of all... I mean, it wasn't... Like, you're right, if it was like a carafe or something, it's really like three or four. It wasn't that huge.
Yeah, it was. Go back and watch it. But anyway, I thought that was just like... That was obviously sticking out. But anyway, I just was like, this is just crazy. Like, I was really disappointed in Damon hiding that there. I thought he could have found it better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly, yes. Where it was hidden, I totally was just like, oh, like, that's terrible. Like, yes, because... yes, most people... would just think it's a bar of soap, and on that level, yes, I agree.
But if you know what the Moonstone is...
Who knows what it looks like? I was just like, well, why would you do that? Yeah, so I agree.
Yeah, he should have not had it in the house. That's the first thing. Had it somewhere in someone's house that she's not invited in. That would have been the best thing. But anyway. And you're skipping the biggest twist. The biggest twist in the episode was the whole thing with Matt, where he got... Caroline to tell him everything about what was going on, and then it's like, oh, delete my memory. But he had taken Vervain. You don't remember this?
No, I totally do. I just hadn't gotten to that yet. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that was the biggest twist ever. That was just like, oh crap, now the mom knows again. Now they know that the Salvatore brothers are vampires. They know they can walk in the day, and the council is going to come hunting for them. That's not good. That's not good at all.
Hey, wait, other question is, did we ever find out, and I guess I was hoping we would find out from Isabel, unless maybe I missed it, like, why does Elena look exactly like Catherine? And please don't say, because she's the doppelganger. That's just a word.
They
like,
haven't explained
what
that.
What does that mean?
They have not explained that.
Well, because to me, if I finally met my mom, who made me look exactly like Catherine, that'd be one of the questions I would have.
Her
I'd be
mom
like,
didn't do
was
that.
Was I a normal birth? Was there a ceremony? Like, what's going
no,
on?
Her
and
mom,
I can't believe she didn't get that information.
Her mom didn't do anything. Because remember, her mom had her when she was 16. Her mom wasn't into vampires and stuff like that before. Her mom,
so there was no... So her mom has her at 16, and then she just happens to look like...
It's not that she happens. She's obviously of the same line. Remember they showed in the flashback that Catherine had a baby?
Yes.
So you were to assume that they're directly related. But I don't know what the whole doppelganger thing means. They still haven't explained that.
Okay. I just want to make sure I didn't miss it, because I was like, did I miss this? Like, it feels like everybody knows this by now, because I feel like that's a big mystery.
Oh, it is. I just don't know what the answer is. And what do you think about Bonnie, her storyline?
You know, at first I wasn't really trusting Bonnie, because she was giving that weird, like, I'm like Dark Willow, and I was like, oh, what's going on with this, you know? But at the end, I was like, I think it's okay. Like, I mean, obviously, what's his name? Elena's brother is worried, you know, and what did you say?
Jeremy.
Jeremy's worried and stuff, but I think it's okay. I think she probably is going to get a little out of control, but it's probably not as bad as I was worried. Because I was worried that I was like, I don't know, like, she looks kind of like something bad, like she's going to turn on him or something, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that what she was trying to...
It's rare that she might die.
Right. I think that was what she was trying to keep a secret, that in order to save Elena, she might have to die.
Right, which, and of course he doesn't, you know, obviously he doesn't want to do that.
Somebody was Jeremy needs to have a better, needs to pick his girlfriends better, because he either picks doomed vampires or, wait, that's two times, he picked two doomed vampires twice, and then he picks his witch girlfriend who is going to sacrifice herself. He is not having a good time in love. That's all.
Wait, so what episode is this? How? Because I know the finale's in May. How many episodes left? Five, maybe?
I'm not sure. But it's just,
I just feel like they've got a lot to do, man.
Oh, yeah. But the thing about Vampire Diaries is they do a really good job. If they're like, okay, we've got all this stuff to do, and it all happens. It happens really quick, but it all happens.
Okay, yeah, totally. I feel like, even though I do think Vampire Diaries usually resolves things very quickly, I kind of feel like the Klaus thing is pretty much, I mean, I've been wrong before. I remember last season, I was like, oh, it's clearly going to be about unearthing Catherine or something, and that, like, did that halfway through. So, but I feel like defeating Klaus has to be, that's got to be the finale.
I don't think they're going to defeat Klaus in the finale.
No, wait, I didn't say kill him, defeat him.
I don't think they're going to defeat him. I think that we're finally going to see Klaus, and we're going to get a bigger idea of the big picture, and bad stuff's going to happen.
Are you predicting that in season 3, Nina Dobrev will only be playing one role? Is that what you're saying? Because he's going to kill one of them?
I didn't say that either.
Well, because if they don't defeat him, that makes me think that he's going to have somewhat of a victory, and that would mean one of them dies.
Well, it depends on what the timeline is. We still don't know the timeline of when he needs to do that ceremony with the Moonstone. Like, we don't know if that's this season or next season or what. I have stopped trying to predict the timeline of Vampire Diaries. I have no clue. But I do think we're going to get introduced to Klaus, the actor, before the end. But that's all I got. And that is... You have any final comments about Vampire Diaries? Did we forget anything?
No, that's it.
And I wanted to talk about Being Human finale, but none of my guests saw it. So,
sorry, I watched Being Human US.
So we'll talk about the finale of Being Human next week when I have somebody to geek out about it, because, wow, it was amazing. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't doubt it.
All right, so if you guys have any questions, comments, thoughts, you can reach us at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at TV Campfire, and we're on Facebook. Talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye.